Flint, Michigan. How did a simple flip of a switch lead to a long-term public health crisis that tested the resilience of its residents? In this Science of Crime podcast series, we examine the chain of events that led to years of damage, distrust, and dirty water. My name is Orla Schwartz, and this is episode number 12, The Pipeline to Prison Lined with Lead. Lead exposure is structural in origin, and its impact on public health and prosperity is rampant. Infants and young children are more susceptible to lead exposure than adults, and young children's rapidly developing brains absorb lead more efficiently than more mature brains. I spoke with Dr. Ricky Pereira, who has her BA from Harvard, a PhD from Columbia University School of Social Work, and her Dr. PhD and MPH from Columbia University School of Public Health. She's a professor of environmental health sciences and serves as the director of the Columbia Center for Children's Environmental Health, and is also internationally recognized for pioneering the field of molecular epidemiology. She explained how vulnerable the brain truly is in early stages of life.
The placenta wasn't the barrier that we thought it was. If you follow the children forward and you've assessed their early exposure, you can see an association with adverse health impacts in childhood, into the school years, and then even into adolescence. And that is a very good example of that.
Until the early 1970s, the acceptable concentration of lead in blood was 60 micrograms of lead per deciliter of blood in children and 80 in adults. The CDC has since lowered its lead exposure guidelines for children to 10 micrograms of lead per deciliter of blood and lowered its guidelines for medical intervention to 20. Once lead permeates the body, it mimics calcium, associated with reduced adult brain volume in the prefrontal and anterior cingulate cortex areas that are responsible for executive functioning, mood regulation, and decision making. Impairments of the central nervous system, fetal organ development, and cognitive function are also common. Claims that lead exposure leads to lower IQs have always been contended, as there are many confounding variables. For example, students who are at a greater risk for lead exposure are also often subject to harsher socioeconomic conditions, which can also factor strongly into time and resources available for schoolwork. But there's still lots of evidence.
Herbert Needleman, David Bellinger, a fine researcher at Harvard, and a friend of mine, actually, did this really great study, and they enrolled kids using their shed teeth. And they concluded this really major finding of a reduction in IQ associated with the lead.
Children with high lead exposure did poorly when assessed on visual and spatial motor skills, figure reproduction, memory, mazes, hand-eye coordination, and construction tasks. Additionally, exposure is also associated with impairments in biosynthesis of heme, which is a basic substance for blood formation, oxygen transport, and energy metabolism. Students with high dentin lead concentrations had significantly higher rates of reading disability, at least 2 grades below expected, and failure to graduate from high school, which lowers lifetime earnings and increases criminal activity. Dr. Ricky Pereira also chimed in on the subject.
You see those IQ reductions, you see attentional problems with lead exposure, and then you see less good functioning in school, less good school performance. You also have antisocial behavior being registered later on in those same children who've been followed. And that results in what you're concerned about, which is more violence and more incarceration.
The effect of lead exposure on intellectual function is detrimental to future economic success. Each IQ point loss represents a loss of $17,815 in present discounted value of lifetime earnings. This estimate factors in the indirect effects of lower educational achievement and workforce participation, as well as the direct effect of lower hourly wages. Financial burdens don't stop there. ADHD, which is common among children with lead exposure, places children at an increased risk for conduct disorder, antisocial behavior, criminal activity, and drug abuse. Whether it be prescription drug therapy, counseling sessions, or tutors, ADHD also extracts significant productivity costs for parents of ADHD children. The parents of a child with ADHD collectively incur approximately $5 billion in work and productivity losses. Overall, assuming average medical treatments per child of $565 for drug and counseling therapy, and average parental work loss costs of $119 per child, lead exposure costs $267 million annually to individual families and society. Under severe economic and familial stress, it's understandable that crime could find a role in attempts to relieve this pressure. Medical and economic research has established a clear connection between early childhood lead exposure and worsened financial and academic success. But even more importantly, these impairments can lead to future criminal activity, especially of a violent nature. The association between cognitive ability and delinquency relies on evidence showing that lead aggravates hyperactivity, impulse behavior, and mental health problems, which have all been shown to predict delinquency. Dr. Ricky Pereira emphasizes the work of David Bellinger. In 1994, David Bellinger found that increased lead exposure correlates strongly with social and emotional dysfunction, while in 2002, Needleman emphasized that adjudicated delinquents are 4 times more likely to have blood lead concentrations that are greater than 25 ppm than non-delinquent adolescents are. In 2008, Wright found a considerably higher and significant rate of arrest, particularly for violent crimes, among young adults who had elevated lead exposures at an early age. In 2000, Nevin finds that the variation in childhood gasoline lead exposure from 1941 to 1986 explains nearly 90% of the variation in violent crime rates from 1990 to 1998. And that lead paint explains 70% of the variation in murder rates from 1900 to 1960. In 2002, Reyes takes the evidence of a relationship between lead poisoning and criminal behavior and estimates that the Clean Air Act in the 1970s and 1980s accounts for 1/3 of the drop in crime throughout the 1990s. Using crime incidence data from the Federal Bureau of Investigation from 2006 and the Bureau of Justice Statistics from 2004, alongside data from Nevin from 2006, a reduction of 1 microgram of lead per deciliter of blood in the average preschool would result in 116,541 fewer burglaries, 2,499 fewer robberies, 53,905 fewer aggravated assaults, 4,186 fewer rapes, and 717 fewer murders. Including direct victim costs, costs related to legal proceedings and incarceration, and lost earnings to both the criminal and victim, the total direct cost of lead-linked crimes is approximately $1.8 billion. An additional $11.6 billion is lost in indirect costs, which include psychological and physical damage necessitating medical treatment and preventative measures resulting from the criminal action. These clinical findings confirm broader research that links lead exposure to antisocial and destructive behavior. Despite the scientific consensus that lead exposure inflicts serious harm, exposure to lead is unequally distributed, even more so today. Contemporary lead exposure is linked to minority status and poverty at the individual level, as well as to racial segregation and concentrated poverty at the neighborhood level, primarily because of the unequal distribution of dilapidated housing that contains remnants of lead paint. Consequently, the highest concentrations of lead in Flint were located in the most disadvantaged neighborhoods, and the evacuated neighborhoods in East Chicago were low-income and predominantly Black. Following subjects in disadvantaged areas, Wright found that pre- and postnatal lead exposure were both associated with total arrests for violent crimes in Cincinnati. And in 1990, Dino found a positive relationship between lead exposure and arrests in a minority sample in Philadelphia. According to researchers from the Cincinnati Children's Environmental Health Center, increased blood lead levels before birth and during early childhood were associated with a higher rate of arrest. Specifically, for every increase of 5 micrograms of lead per deciliter of blood in blood lead levels of 6-year-olds, the risk of being arrested for violent crime as a young adult increased by almost 50%. Rates of mass incarceration are already alarmingly high in the United States, targeting Black men specifically. Paired with public health disparities that impact low-income and minority demographics at a much higher rate, lead poisoning cements the tragic cycles of mass incarceration that are so prevalent in this country. In order to address systemic racism and mass incarceration, we must examine the factors that paved the pipeline to prison, especially public health inequalities and developmental disadvantages.